Thanks for joining us for today's edition of the Portland Christian Center podcast. This week, Pastor Joel Slater shared a message titled, So Much Drama. Now here's Pastor Joel.
If I were to randomly take your yearbook and look for you in it, it's already uncomfortable, isn't it? If I were to randomly take your yearbook and look for you in it, could I judge you on that one picture? Could I know everything about you, your current situation, your past, your future hopes and dreams, just on one snapshot? Whether it's your fourth grade in elementary school, first year of college, last year of college, what you thought was your last year of college. Actually, I think this was my second senior year. But if you were to evaluate anyone on us one sliver of time, you'd have to wonder about their future, wouldn't you? Now, would any of us, honestly, any takers here, want to be judged solely on one snapshot of your life? No, somebody's actually saying no. Probably in maybe in one way or shape or another, you might respond, please don't, please. What if I actually were to, somebody actually wanted to read a snapshot of their portion of life and someone said, please don't. That is just way too much drama going on in there. Way too much drama. Speaking of drama, have you noticed the news lately? Would you say there's a little bit of drama going on in our world today? Yeah, there's wars, there's weather, there's escalating and random attacks in the most unlikely of places, whether it's in airport lobbies, whether it's in ball fields, whether it's in nightclubs. And the political rhetoric is on a scale that no one in recent history can remember. And so it's probably safe to say, without too much exaggeration, there is just too much drama going on in this world. Now, what do I mean by drama? Let's get on the same page here. Well, I have a definition on the screen. And what I mean by drama, as I'm talking about this today, is that drama is defined as any situation or series of events having vivid, emotional, conflicting, or striking interests or results. Now, does that describe something that you're going through today? That you're experiencing vivid, emotional, conflicting, striking, interesting results. And I'm here to say it's not just out there, is it? It's in here. It's in there. It's in your house. It's in your workplace. It's in our schools. There is a lot of drama going on. And let's just think, let's just kind of investigate where the drama might be happening. Maybe it's in your career. Maybe your career has taken a dramatic turn. Maybe the picture you had of your family, the picture you had an idea of your family, whether it's you're just, again, finding a spouse, finding a relationship, maybe your picture of your kids, your grandkids, you know, your extended family, you had an idea of wonderful family get-togethers, but they're scattered all over the nation, and you spend more time alone than you do with them. Maybe your family doesn't want to pick up the phone, doesn't answer that text, won't friend you on Facebook. And maybe that picture you had of your family is in upheaval. Maybe you just moved here to Portland, and it's a lot weirder than you thought. Or, just to be fair, maybe it's not weird enough. Maybe you thought you'd be in a relationship by now. And maybe anytime you try, those relationships don't work out. Maybe you have been healthy your entire life, and now suddenly, it's like someone flipped a switch and systems are going haywire. Folks, can we say there's a lot of drama going on? And I'm here to say that life is full of uncertainty. We see reports almost every day, almost every hour, about violence, terrorism, financial fluctuations, environmental impact. And more, it seems like faith itself is under attack. That some of the bedrocks of society that we thought were guaranteed, everything from faith to the safety of schools to the safety and the stability of our financial infrastructure, it's all going crazy. And now what seemed for so long was certain is now uncertain. And I'm here to tell you today that uncertainty is for certain. Uncertainty is unavoidable, and it's beyond our control. But living in fear is an option. Uncertainty is for certain. You just never know what you're going to get. But living in fear is completely up to you. And so what if the solution to so much drama was very simple? It was trust. What if so much drama, and I know drama, I've got two middle school daughters. I know drama. I'm not talking academically here. So much drama. And though it's not easy, it is simple. The solution is trust. So this morning, if you came hoping for another segment of our Extra Grace Required series, let me just kind of assure you today that you got to believe that if you're dealing with any Extra Grace Required relationship, there's some drama there, right? And I would encourage you today that in any Extra Grace Required relationship, you got to trust the Word of God and what it says about how to handle that. But I want to take just a moment and pause here today before moving on with Pastor Ray, moving on to another example of Extra Grace Required, and take a moment to just leverage what we were promoted, this walk through the Old Testament event. Now, I know, and I'm with this, that I know that when you hear the words Old Testament, you automatically think a couple things. I can read your minds, all right? When you hear the words Old Testament, first thing you think, it's old. And you think, second of all, you think it's old. And anything old is obviously not new. I know that's profound. And if it's not new, it's probably irrelevant. And I know even this, it's not just irrelevant, but in our day and age, the Old Testament is not just seemingly irrelevant. It is now controversial. You'll hear people say, oh, you're a Christian, you believe the Bible. Oh, so you believe all those things in Leviticus. You believe that we're supposed to treat people, we're supposed to stone people who are not exactly like us. Oh, you believe that weird stuff, don't you? Oh, you espouse slavery, or you espouse, you know, a genocide, and you believe in a God who would inflict harm on innocent people. Have you ever heard anybody say anything like that? Yeah. And they get it from the Old Testament. But here's what we so often miss about the Old Testament. Here's where all the drama comes from when it comes to the Old Testament, is that we apply the Old Testament in light of the New Testament. That you can stand with assurance, confidence, and you don't have to be a jerk about it, and say, you know what, I don't think you have the full picture of the Old Testament, because we only apply the Old Testament in light of what has been done in the New Testament. But it's not a one-way street, because we interpret the New Testament in light of the Old Testament. The Old Testament is an amazing collection of material. And so I have news for you, that the Old Testament has been giving us a consistent solution to this idea of so much drama and uncertainty from the very beginning of it in Genesis to the end of it in Malachi. It has been giving us the solution to so much drama. It's not just meant to be a placeholder. It's not just meant to be the source of some Sunday school material, but it is meant to point us in the direction for the solution to so much drama. Someone once said that theology that does not become biography is simply wishful thinking. See, you can know a lot about the Old Testament. You can know the Bible characters. You can know some of the events, and even some of you have been to the Holy Land. You can point to geographical areas, and I've been there, and I've walked there, and I've seen that, been there, done that, bought the t-shirt. But theology that doesn't become part of your biography is simply wishful thinking. Because despite its age, it's old. The Old Testament is old. It lives up to its name. Despite its age, despite its size, the Old Testament continually and consistently reminds us that in a world of dramatic uncertainty, trusting God brings dramatic assurance. From beginning to end, In a world of uncertainty, it's not just now. The famous historian who wrote books about George Washington and James Madison and that time of the American Revolution that we romanticize so much and say, oh, wouldn't it be great to get back to an age where we were a God-centered country and we were a Christian nation. How many, you've heard that. And David McCullough, the historian, says, don't fool yourself. It was never an easier time. It was never an easier time. That in the Old Testament, it was a world of dramatic uncertainty. But they found that trusting God brought dramatic assurance. And so like us, time and time again, Old Testament character after character would have avoided so much drama if they had simply trusted God from the very beginning. And nowhere do we find a character who would espouse this principle of finding the solution to so much drama by putting dramatic trust in God than Abraham. The character of Abraham. Now, you may think you know Abraham. Abraham is a pretty famous character. In fact, he's so famous that the biggest religions in the world, I went on the Pew Research website, and it said that combined population of Judaism, Islam, and Christianity, a total of 3,814,000,000 people consider themselves children of Abraham. I think he made a big deal. He made an impact in this world. And so I want to look at Abraham today, and in order to appreciate Abraham's story, or any story in the Old Testament, it helps to embrace an axiom that I've come to embrace in so many areas of my life, and that axiom is, there's always more to the story. When you engage somebody who has beliefs other than yours, there's always more to the story. When someone treats you wrong, there's always more to the story. When someone cuts you off in traffic, there's always more to the story. Now, we don't know what that story is, but when it comes to the Old Testament in general and Abraham in particular, there is always more to the story. So much drama has been caused by people who have randomly selected stories, have randomly selected principles, have randomly selected laws or people in the Old Testament and misconstrued the true meaning behind them. And so if you don't know how to answer someone when they come against you, when it comes to the validity, the application, the value of the Old Testament, you'd simply have to say, hey, just pause for a moment. There's always more to the story. There's always more to that story. Oh, you don't like that law? There's always more to the story. You don't like the way that someone got away with murder? There's always more to the story. You don't like the way he treated her or she treated him or they treated them? There's always more to the story. And so when you read stories in the Old Testament, first, recognize how it begins on a really sour note. It started out great for like two chapters, and it goes downhill pretty well. Maybe that describes your marriage. Maybe that describes your family. Maybe that describes your job. It started out good, but so quickly it turned into so much drama. And so in other words, in order to understand Abraham, you have to understand the rest of the story. And real quickly, I just want to give you a quick fast-forward synopsis of the rest of the story. From beginning to end, we're going to look at Genesis chapter 12, and we're going to start in verse 1 through 3. So if you have your Bibles, turn to Genesis chapter 12, verses 1 through 3. But in order to understand Genesis chapter 12, verses 1 through 3, you have to understand Genesis chapter 1 through 11. Because in Genesis 1, what started out good, God called his creation good. God created man, and he said it was very good. Ends up with the fall of Adam and Eve. And Romans says that by sin entered the world through one man, and death by sin, and therefore all have sinned. It started out good, but he ruined it for the rest of us. And humans got cast out of paradise. Not too long after that, it goes from bad to worse. In Genesis 3, Adam and Eve have children, Cain and Abel. And the family unit that God intended to be a source of companionship and joy has now become a place of jealousy and rage and ultimately murder. Does that sound like your last Thanksgiving dinner? That what was supposed to be, Hallmark lies to us, folks. Hallmark Channel lies to us. It's going to be a great time, and yet yours looks nothing like that because there's more to the story, isn't there? So Genesis 3, the family unit has fallen apart. And then a couple chapters later, Genesis 5, the development of the human race. The world is being populated from Adam to a man named Noah. And Noah, again, there's more to his story than just a boat. But Noah, it says in chapter 4 that he was the son of a man named Lamech. And you can tell how bad things have gotten when Lamech names his son Noah. Because Noah means rest. And it's Lamech's great hope in light of everything else. Again, there's more to the story. He didn't just say, well, he's my retirement package. But Lamech looks around at the rest of the earlier parts of Genesis and says, this world is going crazy. There's a lot of drama going on. And he names his son Noah, hoping that there's going to be some, God's going to grant some rest to humans from the fallout and the drama of this creation. And with Noah's birth, Lamech is hoping that things get better. But if you just keep reading into that, those chapters, things go from worse to even worse. And then in Genesis 11, after the flood, you think they get the hint. But the more things change, the more things stay the same, don't they? And after the flood, after God wipes out all of humanity, save for a few that put their trust in him, they get back together. They get the band back together. And they decide, you know what? We need to build something to our greatness. We're awesome. But we can do it. There's nothing we can't accomplish. And that is, rather than obey God and trust in God, they began to consolidate their power and they begin to build the Tower of Babel. And the Tower of Babel in Genesis 11 could be described as the high watermark of sin in God's creation so far. And so yet, in dramatic fashion, God takes the initiative and turns his attention to one man. One man. Sounds like a movie trailer, doesn't it? One man who will save us all. This one man becomes the major concern of the rest of the book of Genesis. And Genesis isn't a small book by any means, but in chapter 12, this man comes on the scene, and from Genesis 12 all the way to the end, he becomes the primary focus, him and his descendants, that sets the stage for transformation of global history. Ladies and gentlemen, I introduce to you, for evidence, Abraham. And when we're introduced to Abraham, it is dramatic in and of itself. Look with me in Genesis chapter 12, verse 1. And it says this, "The Lord said to Abram, go from your country, your people, and your father's household to the land that I will show you." Now, don't miss this. This is not just a text message. This isn't pick up some groceries, pick up some bread from the store on your way home. This is a radical call. Abram, you find him, he is going about his business, he's with his family, he's making money, he's living life. And suddenly, the Lord calls to Abraham. This is a radical call. Because in an uncertain world, how many of us can relate to this? In an uncertain world, we tend to cling to that which is certain, don't we? Any semblance of certainty, even if it's unhealthy. Some of you are living in some dramatic conditions right now. And anyone would tell you, and maybe some have, that it's unhealthy. That relationship you're in is not healthy. That job you're in is not healthy. That environment your health, the way you're living, your lifestyle is unhealthy. But you don't know what it's like to live healthy. You don't know what it's like to have boundaries. You don't know what would happen if you said no to that person or said yes to that opportunity or you said yes to taking that risk. You don't know what happened. So you're just content to live in the drama of the status quo. How's that working for you? It's a radical call. Now, I find it interesting. Again, there's always more to the story. If you want to appreciate the radical nature of this call, when the Lord calls to Abraham, leave your family. Go from your country, your people, and your father's household. That in of itself is significant. Because if you read earlier in Genesis 11, you find out his father's name is Terah. And the Hebrew word there is delay. You read Genesis 11, 27 through 31, and you find out that Terah got up and left his place in a land called Ur and traveled across the Fertile Crescent up north and west and the long ways following the rivers and landed. He was told to go to Canaan. He was told to go to the promised land. And Terah got as far as Haran and he stopped. He lived up to his name. He delayed. he delayed. He said, yeah, that's a good idea, but you know what? I'm going to stop short. I'm just going to play it safe. I'm going to go far. I should get credit for that, but I'm going to play it safe. But contrary, Abraham was asked to give up all the symbols of security and all the symbols of autonomy, control, that his father and his predecessors had clung to. And it's that decision, it's that defining moment in Abraham's life where he made a decision in light of incredible, dramatic uncertainty. He put his trust in God and found dramatic assurance. And that decision impacted him, his family, his extended family, and it impacts you today, whether you realize it or not. God said in verse 2, I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. This is going to be reciprocal. You're going to get, and you're going to give. I'm going to go big on blessing you, Abraham. And the people of earth, time and time again, nothing changes, continually seek to make a name for themselves. You have a YouTube channel, you have a Twitter account, you have a Facebook page, you have an Instagram, you have every opportunity in the world for your 15 seconds of fame today. But God, let me just tell you this, God will reject ambitious plans that are done against his will. Eventually, sooner or later, God's not going to share the glory. But by choosing to trust, but choosing to follow God, the trophies that the people of Babel, that the people of Genesis 1 through 11 sought and fought for and attempted to take for themselves, things like fame and security, a heritage for the future, these are all God's free gifts to Abraham. He said, you will be a blessing. Folks, when you read the Old Testament, you got to slow down. We may jump to conclusions. Well, I know what that is. Do you know what, when God tells Abraham, you will be a blessing, do you know what he's saying there? There's more to the story. He's saying, you're not just going to be a blessing. You're not just going to be a guy people want to invite over for dinner. You're not just going to be that person that people consult with you. You, this word comes from the word barakah, and it means you, Abraham, are going to be a treaty of peace. It's going to be through you that all this chaos and all this drama, I'm going to actually use you to make a treaty of peace between God and mankind. It's going to be through you, Abraham, that all this drama that's been going on since time began, brother against brother, sister against sister, father against son, daughter against mother, country against country, ethnic group against ethnic group, I am using you, Abraham, as a treaty of peace. And Abraham's act of trust becomes the solution for so much drama in the world. And so God expands in verse 3, I will bless those that bless you. I will bless those that bless you. Dr. Ed Smeltzer is here today, and he is a proponent of building relationships with Israel. Bridges for peace. That if you bless Israel, you receive a blessing. And that is that we see that time and time again. That they're God's people, that God has chosen to be that instrument for making peace with the world, and it ultimately came through Jesus Christ. You will be a blessing. So God says, I'm going to bless who you bless, and whoever curses you, I'm going to curse, and all peoples on earth will be blessed through you. Now, I don't know if you count it or not, but any time in the Old Testament, anytime, anywhere in Scripture that you see a word repeated over and over again, you need to sit up and take notice of that word. That's not God running out of words, but that is God sending you a message. And he says, I will bless. He uses the word bless 5 times. And this dynamic word, bless is not just a pat on the head, folks. Bless is not just a kiss on the cheek. Bless is not just we used to have a wonderful usher. I grew up under his tutelage, and I probably have a few cavities I blame on him, was that we had Dellis Wells over here in the corner, and Dellis would greet you with a Tootsie Roll all the time. You better believe as a kid and even as a teenager, I lived for those Tootsie Rolls. I'd do a People of Israel and Exodus march, all the way around the building to get another Tootsie Roll from Dellis Wells. That Tootsie Roll won't last, but the blessing of a man who would cheer me on and love me and encourage me and always have a smile for me lives forever. But that's not the blessing God's talking about. God's talking about something so much bigger. This word bless expresses God's purpose to give those who trust him all they need to fulfill their lives in his creation. God wants to bless you, folks. Now, I know that word and that phrase and that promise gets a bad rap because you've heard it on TV and you've heard it people say, oh, God wants to bless you. And you go, well, where's the blessing? We're going to talk about that in a minute. Don't worry. But God's promise to bless is to provide everything you need. Maybe not everything you want, but everything you need to fulfill the life that he has given you in this creation. This fivefold repetition of blessing is deliberately set in opposition to the fivefold occurrence of the word curse that's been spoken continually in Genesis 1 through 11. Remember I said there's always more to the story? God's idea of blessing is not just some out-of-the-blue idea. Well, I'm going to bless you just because I have nothing else to do. But God has seen the drama of Genesis 1 through 11. He's seen the drama from history's beginning all the way up to this current point in Genesis 12. And he says, I'm going to bless you to rectify all the garbage, all the problems, all the suffering, all the drama that is going on through this world. Because you've heard from Genesis 1 through 11, this word curse, constantly, because of sin, because of man's disobedience, because of man's choice not to trust God from the very beginning, man has been cursed. Now, some people would push back and say, well, that's not really fair, because God hadn't given us the law yet. We didn't know what we were supposed to do. Folks, I'll tell you one thing. You go back to Genesis 1 through 3. God only gave one law. He said, just don't touch. One law. We find excuses. Well, you didn't tell me. My kids say this. Well, I didn't know you didn't want me to do that. You didn't tell me. Really? Really. Don't burn yourself. Don't hurt yourself. Don't hit your brother. Don't hit your sister. Don't you hit me. You're still having trouble with that one. But God, at the very beginning, said, just one thing. Just let's keep it really simple. Don't do that. And we didn't trust him to do that. A lack of trust is what caused all these problems. A lack of trusting God and who he is and what he says to do caused all these problems and brought a curse. And so that word curse expresses God's awful judgment on his creatures when they rebel against his purposes for them and decide not to trust him. Hey, the theme all the way through the Old Testament, God says, if you'll just do what I tell you to do, if you will be my people, if you will follow my statutes, if you will obey my laws, if you will trust in me and depend upon me, things will go well with you. May not always all the time. There's still going to be problems. In this world, you're going to have problems. Yes, there's going to be someone that's going to attack you. There's going to be someone that ignores you. There's going to be someone that overlooks you. There's going to be someone that shortchanges you. But in the end, you can trust God to work it out. But how often have you and I blurted out, how in the world could this have happened to me? When we experience some drama in our lives. Why? And how often has our drama created drama for other people? The Old Testament in general, and God's judgment in particular, pretty much explains it. Folks, this shouldn't be a shocker. This shouldn't be a brain teaser for us. But God's curse on or judgment on humankind has meant four fundamental things. One, it's just meant a loss of freedom. That we have become slaves to sin. That we have been alienated from the soil in Genesis 3 out of sin. God says, you brought a curse on yourself, Adam. Your work is going to be hard. Folks, work is not a four-letter word. We were created to work. We were created for a purpose. We were created to contribute. We were created to make a difference in this world. But the curse made the work abhorrently hard on us. So it's not work that was the curse, but it was the way work was going to reject us, and we were going to be in conflict with that work that we suffer from. God's curse, God's judgment on our rebellion, on our lack of trust, creates an estrangement from one another. There's so much drama because you don't trust anyone to speak the truth. You don't trust anyone when they bring you a compliment. You don't trust anyone that just brings a word of wisdom, a word of advice. You don't know what you're talking about. You don't know what I'm going through. No, I don't know what you're going through, but God does. And will you trust him? He knows you. He created you, but you won't trust him. And there's so much drama. And you've estranged yourself from another. That's common. There's one last, and one last is moral and spiritual degradation. What in the world is going on in this world? It should be no mystery for those of us who know the Old Testament. God loves us enough. He told us, he explained, he goes, go back to the source. The situation today, the circumstances today, the source of it today is the same today as it was yesterday. Sin is not an archaic term. Sin is the problem and the source of so much drama. But God has a solution. God has a solution. And his solution is to Abraham, I'm going to bless you so that through Abraham, God is at work. He begins the work to reverse the effects of that judgment on his creation. God is not done yet. And so Abraham's decision to trust God, all people will be blessed. Verses 4 and 5. So Abraham didn't just hear it. Abraham didn't just nod. Abraham didn't just say, that sounds good to me. Just let me know when it's done. But Abraham got off his seat and moved and did and followed through. Abraham, so verse 4, Abraham went as the Lord had told him. As the Lord had told him. And Lot went with him, his nephew. Abraham was 75 years old when he set out from Haran. Folks, it doesn't matter how old you are. It's not too late for you. If you've been living in so much drama, this gives you hope today. He was 75 before he moved. He's not even started having kids yet. So there might be hope. And he took his wife Sarai, his nephew Lot, all the possessions they accumulated, and the people they had acquired in Haran, and they set out for the land of Canaan. And this is the kicker. This is what defines him and differentiates him from his father. It says there at the end of verse 5, and they arrived there. He followed through. He followed through. Now pause right there. Just pause for a minute. And to compare that with, again, with Genesis 11. And I admit that I'm guilty. I am guilty of skipping over Genesis 11 because, yeah, who cares who his father was and who his father begat? There's a lot of begatting in the Old Testament. It doesn't make much sense. But it's real. And there's two characteristics of God's call to trust him. And I don't want you to miss this because I miss it every time until I start studying for this sermon. There's two characteristics of God's call when he calls you to trust him. Number one, there's the power of the call. There's the power of the call. The power of the call is absolutely necessary and it's absolutely gracious. It's absolutely necessary because unless we personally hear from God, unless we personally respond to the call of God, and let me pause right there and say, just because you haven't heard the audible in your ear voice of God does not mean that God is not speaking to you. He has given you his word. He is speaking to you continually. I don't know everything that God has to say, but he's given me enough to say. So we are without excuse of ignorance. God has spoken to us. The power of the call is necessary because unless we personally respond to the call of God, we may grow up to be responsible, moral, even religious people, but we will still end up being nice little idolaters like Abram. Abram did not get his act together and then God called him. He was in the midst of paganism. He was in the midst of idol worship. Pastor Ray likes to say Abraham was probably nothing more than a pagan moon god worshiping man. He was not ready to go, but he heard the call of God. And if we don't respond to it, we'll end up moral. We may be good people, but we're not stepping out and we're not trusting in God. Dr. Ronald E. Wright says, the Bible intends its message to be translated into human lives, not simply intellectualized. This story is not just to know, not just to remember, but to be incorporated into your very life. The power of the call is necessary. Otherwise, you know a lot, but you don't do anything. The power of the call is that it's gracious, that Abraham was unqualified. He wasn't a nice guy. He wasn't faithful, as we would determine today. But the call of God, he simply said, you. I'm going to pick you. You got nothing going for you. You have not proved yourself, but I'm going to pick you. And God is doing the same for you and you and you today. You don't have to prove yourself to God, but God is calling you today to trust him. It's the power of the call, and it's number two, it's the radical nature of the call. The radical nature of the call is that it's personally radical. It's saying, when God said, leave your country, he's saying, get out, run, get out of there. It's not enough to simply sit in this sanctuary week after week, year after year, decade after decade. It's not enough to simply feel comfortable in a Christian culture and be part of the furniture. You can't outsource trust in God. You can't outsource your trust in God. I can't do it for you. And so my question to you is, have you met God yourself? Have you encountered him yourself? And have you responded yourself? It is personally radical, but it's also volitionally radical. At its heart, the call of God is a call to surrender your will. The call, go to the land, I will show you, is not a very detailed plan. Abraham, get up and I'll show you along the way. Abraham, get up and, well, you'll figure it out somehow. We so many of us want the details of God's plan today, but that has never been necessarily the case with God. God doesn't tell Abraham where. He doesn't tell him the details. He just simply says, I will show you. And if you say, if you're holding out on God today, if you're not trusting in God today, if you're saying that, well, you'll answer the call of God if God answers all your questions, can I just really pull back the veil on that and say, then you're choosing to be God yourself. If you're making a deal with God and saying, I won't follow you until you give me all the details, you are setting terms. And that's not how God works. But if you say, I will follow you, it's also missionally radical. Missionally radical. What do I mean by that? I will bless you so that you will be a blessing. And here's the litmus test. Here's the difference between a Terah and an Abram. Christians, authentic Christ followers, don't base decisions based on what's most comfortable for them, what is most safe for them, but they ask themselves, where can I be a blessing? What's in it for me? No. What can I do? What can I do to be a blessing? Now, you may be here today and saying, well, what if? What if I'm there? What if I've been trying? But what if I've been trusting God and it hasn't happened yet? I've been trying. It just hasn't happened yet. Can I tell you that Abraham feels your pain? That Abraham isn't operating in a vacuum? See, Abraham left. He left, but he never really arrived. He lived his entire life, Abraham, in a gap, a huge gap between the promise and reality. Fast forward to Genesis 15. Real quickly, it says this, after so much drama has happened in just a few chapters, the word of the Lord came to Abraham in a vision. He said, don't be afraid, Abram. I am your shield. I am your very great reward. But Abraham said, Sovereign Lord, what can you give me since I remain childless and the one who will inherit my estate is Eliezer of Damascus, a servant? And Abraham said, you have given me no children. You said you would bless me and I would be a blessing, but it's kind of hard to be a blessing when time's ticking and it's just me. You've given me no children, so a servant is going to be my heir. And the question is, do you ever feel this way in one way, shape, or form? You've been handed a bunch of promises. A pastor's gotten up and promise, prayer after prayer, promise after promise, and you're still not seeing it. And all you're left is with a lot of promises and a lot more questions. But God speaks into that. Chapter 15, verse 4 says, then the word of the Lord came to him. This man will not be your heir, but a son who is your own flesh and blood will be your heir. God took Abraham outside and said, look up at the sky and count the stars, if indeed you can count them. And then he said, Abraham, so shall your offspring be. If we could just tap the brakes for just a moment and refuse to evaluate Abraham on just one or two snapshots in his life. Instead of just picking up the Bible and, that's a good story. Hope he made it. We can see later, again, there's always more to the story, that in this chapter, understanding what Abraham did, it took one step and he began to trust God, that this 4,000-year-old statement describes the relationship between God and man. And it's this, verse 6. After God made this promise, Abraham believed the Lord. He believed the Lord, and it was credited to him as righteousness. A single moment A single expression of faith sets the standard for certainty of salvation. It's that one statement, Genesis 15:6, that opens up all the possibilities. That it's not a matter of what you do or how you do it, but Abraham believed God. Early on in history, it was just getting started. God looked down at all the drama of the world and he said, I'm going to insert myself into that drama. I'm going to do the dramatic, and I'm going to select one unrighteous man, and I'm going to initiate a relationship with that man, and that relationship is going to give birth to a promise that he won't ever see fulfilled, and yet he'll still trust me, and by this, it sets the standard for everything else. In return for Abraham's faith, God credited him with righteousness and created a path for personal relationship. And he's here today to make the same offer to you and to me. Trust. Trust is the solution to so much drama. Now, I know this could be hard. I know this can be really hard. There is a swirl of questions running through your head. Maybe it's hard because of how you were raised. No, it can't be that simple. No, you're really, really watering this down. No, it's biblical. Maybe you think it's hard because of what life is like right now. You don't know what I'm going through. You don't know the drama that I'm in. I don't. So I understand it's hard. Maybe it's hard because of what you grew up hearing in church or school, depending on your background, your denomination. Maybe it's hard because of what you have read or what you've watched on TV or what you found on the internet. Or maybe it's hard because it's easier to live with the certainty of the drama in your current life versus the uncertainty of trusting God. And maybe it's hard to believe that a bunch of stories in the Old Testament can provide any comfort, any hope, any direction, any answers for the drama that you're going through right now. But if you fast forward, in the New Testament, it's interesting that the Apostle Paul, when describing what a true Christian is, in books like Romans and Galatians, you look at Romans 4:23 through 25, we're not going to get there. But I would challenge you to write that down. Romans 20, chapter 4, verses 23 through 25. When Paul talks about what a Christian is, he doesn't talk about Moses, he doesn't talk about King David. He uses Abraham as the example. And he cites that verse. When it comes to being a Christ follower, when it comes to that defining decision that changes everything, that trades hopelessness for hope, powerlessness for power, directionlessness for direction, weakness for strength, sin for salvation, Paul said, you got to be like Abraham. Abraham believed the Lord, and it was credited him as righteousness. In a world of dramatic uncertainty, trusting God brings dramatic assurance.
Thanks again for listening to this week's edition of the Portland Christian Center podcast. If you want more information about the ministries of Portland Christian Center or have a prayer need, please visit us online at pcctoday.com. Thanks for listening.